Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite. Here you go.
Prophetic. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. I could have gone with pathetic, but instead we decided to go with prophetic, as in Dana Brown, the GM of the Houston Astros, who clearly are toward the end of this dynasty that may be the best dynasty I've been around for in Major League Baseball history, of my history with Major League Baseball. They seem to make it to the LCS World Series, win a bunch of World Series. Dana Brown comes in as GM, comes in a very strange hiring process where we know that Jim Crane is actually the one who wants control, has control, is more than just a little bit involved. The Astros have been struggling mightily. They are 12-23. It's been 35 games. It is now, given your math, the season is 20% over, and the Astros find themselves in last place. And the question asked of Dana Brown is, where are we? How do we feel about the season? What do we think about being a buyer or a seller? Of course, it's not too early to think about it because of the Arias trade with the Marlins, that now local media and fans and bloggers, et cetera, are wondering whether their teams are going to be adding or subtracting. And a team in last place with a record like what the Astros have, in theory, you're getting ready to sell Mortimer. But instead, Dana Brown came out with what I think is the funniest statement we've had in the baseball season so far. And by funny, I mean the Joe Pesci type of funny. Like, I'm amused by his statement. He was asked whether they could be sellers, which is a very reasonable question. And he said, no, I can't envision that. Funny. Of course, you can envision that. That's your job, to envision everything. But no, I can't envision that. This ball club is too good. We have a really good rotation, a really good bullpen. Our bats are off to a slow start. I can't predict any scenario where we become sellers. The team is too good. Let's break it down, Coca. Let's go one at a time, very slowly and methodically. One, I can't envision that. I'd like to fire you. Two, we have a really good rotation. Do you know that their starting rotation has an ERA that is 14th ranked? Not bad. Out of 30 teams, nope, 14th, second to last. I'm only giving you American League because that's how we look at it as an executive front office. We don't look at the major league, where we are in the major league rankings. We look within our league. 14th in starting ERA. News alert, that's bad. Really bad. But he said they have a really good rotation. I guess what he meant is, I have a really good bullpen. The bullpen ERA is 12th. Hader, Presley, disasters. Bringing in Hader, great free agent signing, except I told you it wasn't. It's not that I don't like Josh Hader. It's that when you've got a performing closer, if you want to bring in reinforcements, you do it at the deadline. If you want to bring in another closer, you bring in Urbina in to add to a looper, 0-3 alert. You do it because then you can't have enough back end of the bullpen, because by the end of the season, your bullpen is thrashed. They're exhausted. Their arms are about to fall off. And you bring in, you bolster your bullpen then. But to sign a free agent like Hader and then to tell Presley, hey, you're moving to the eighth before the season starts, it turns into a problem that then manifests itself on the field, which this clearly have. This clearly has. Sorry for that grammar mistake. Our bats are off to a slow start. Let's give you some stats. American League, where do you think they are on average? The Astros? First, they have the highest team average in the American League. How about OPS? Fourth. Home runs? Fourth. They're even eighth in runs scored. So he mentioned Bregman's name. He mentioned Abreu's name. Not relevant. Again, a real GM who actually, and I don't want to call Dana Brown a real GM because he doesn't have the power of a GM, but I digress. A front office, even an involved Jerry Jones-like owner, you are not going to have performing pieces up and down your lineup. You look at what your team is doing as a whole on the offensive side. Yes, Abreu is down in West Palm Beach. Joe Espada, the new manager of the Houston Astros after Dusty Baker retired. I'm very happy for Joe. I know him well. He worked with me. I love that he has a chance to manage. He's obviously, his team has struggled, no doubt. Meeting the media every day, it's hard to go from a managerial candidate and one of the top managerial candidates, a perennial bridesmaid who finally gets to take the chuppah, and then all of a sudden you realize, whoa, there's no one above me to take any heat. I've got to talk to the media. He said that Abreu is doing very well in West Palm Beach. Thank God. Jose Abreu, that free agent signing, he's fallen off a cliff. They sent him down. They remember, I told you, they agreed to option him, and he agreed to be optioned because you have to agree to be optioned when you're a player who's been around as long as Abreu has. And you don't send him to AAA or AA. You go to spring training, and then you play in A games because all these teams have, the major league teams have minor league teams at their spring training facility. So he's down in West Palm Beach, and Espada said he's doing very well in West Palm Beach. Well, thank God for that. You'd hate to send your big league free agent, your starting first baseman, to single A in Palm Beach and have him do crappy. I wouldn't even have our managers point out how well a player is doing. That's like when a pitcher goes down on rehab, or an Alec Manoah type, when you pretend there's an injury and you send them down for lack of performance and they shove it up the keister of a lineup in single A. It's not like you say, oh my God, he figured it out. Everything's great. They had Justin Verlander come back last night against the Yankees as a way to try to salvage their starting rotation, coming back from injury, being paid for mostly by the Metropolitans. And he got rocked by the Yankees. He's had a terrible first two starts to the season, or three starts or four starts. He's got 22 innings in, and he is just not pitching well. And he was supposed to then take over because of the injuries to Urquidy, the injuries to Javier. It doesn't matter if you know their rotation. Doesn't matter anything except just know this. All signs point to a problem for the Astros. And I still think that they will turn it around because I do think that they're too good a team. I agree that I would not be a seller right now. Go back and think about this team the way we talk about when you evaluate your team at spring training. You evaluate them off season, spring training, then during the season. And you're trying to figure out, were you right or were you wrong about your evaluation? I'm not willing to say I was wrong about the Astros evaluation. I'm not willing to say they're not going to win the division, but I'm getting darn tootin' close. Smart enough not to have chosen them to win the World Series. But that said, The Astros clearly have a problem, and it's not like they're going to get tremendous reinforcements. Their farm system is mediocre, which is not a huge deal for good teams. That's going to happen when you've had a dynasty at the big league level. You don't get good picks. You don't really. They had Tucker Alvarez. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. People are going to talk about farm systems and how they don't have many players in the top 100. They probably have a player or two, and that's it. What's my conclusion about Dana Brown and the Astros? It's the following. The best thing he should have said when meeting the media, if he wants to do any sort of appearance, if he wants to talk about the slow start, is just say this. We still believe in our club the way we believed in them when the season started. There is no question our record does not reflect where we thought we'd be 20% into the season, 35 games in. This club has earned the opportunity to get every benefit of my doubt before making a decision about what we're going to do when the deadline comes. That's it. Leave it at that. I really wanted to sign a Japanese player and post. There's a posting system where you have to pay money. And I remember when Dice K came out and, hey, do we have a chance? No, it's too much money because you need to pay upfront money when you post for a player. There's a posting system to get Japanese players. Then Japanese players become sort of free agents, and then you pay a posting fee. We had two Japanese pitchers join Major League Baseball this season at minimum, but the two I want to talk about are the Cubs pitcher and the Dodgers pitcher. If you haven't watched the Cubs play yet, you should check them out. You should check this pitcher out. His name is Shota Imanaga, and he's going to be called a rookie just like Yamamoto. Not exactly what I would refer to as a rookie, but that said, 30 years old, it's an old rookie. He is basically unhittable. He has fewer than one runner on base per inning. It's like a 0.82 whip. He doesn't walk anyone. He strikes out a goodly number of hitters. He had an ERA sub one. Council pitched him into the eighth inning yesterday, gave up a two-run home run, but his ERA is still a stellar, shocking ERA. He's given up like five earned runs. And I was thinking about the contract that the Cubs signed him to, and I remember my reaction when he got the four-year, $53 million deal. It can turn into $80 million because of team options. There's a couple $20 million team options that exist. And I was brought back to that feeling of unbelievable envy. When we sign pitchers and overpay and they end up being bad signings, there's a track record at the big league level. There is no guarantee that when you perform in Japan that you are going to perform in Major League Baseball. There is a laundry list of players who are mediocre. They go from great to mediocre, good to bad. It is very rare that you go from good to great or mediocre to good or mediocre to great. And I'm not saying that Imanaga was mediocre. He was not. He was a top pitcher in Japan. But still, what the Cubs have gotten from him is nothing short of a surprise. And the reason why agents and teams protect themselves with deals for Japanese pitchers like this, Yamamoto, we're going to get to, was truly an exception to this crazy rule. It was a crazy exception to this rule that I think should be a firm rule, is you give yourself the flexibility in the name of a team option. And the flexibility is we're going to invest X dollars, but before we agree to invest X plus Y, we'd like to see how things translate. Well, so far, so good. I hope the Cubs are smart enough not to pick up the team options right now. That's another thing that happens with owners and front offices. You get such prisoner of the moment recency bias, and you get all excited because your fan base is excited. The media is excited. You watch this guy pitch and he's lights out. Right now, we're at the beginning of May. it would be like after Yamamoto got his butt handed to him in South Korea in March of this year when the season started against the Padres, where you release him because you say, all right, we made a mistake. He stinks. Meanwhile, since then, he's been practically unhittable. He's like 4-0 with a 1.75 over his last bunch of starts. You can't make decisions on players based on such a small sample size. You can try to convince yourself that a Japanese player who's played professionally, it's not a small sample size because, look, he's been succeeding as a professional over in Japan. But it's different. You need a larger body of success at the big league level. But it's damn tempting to pick up those team options because as a free agent, can you imagine? I mean, it's such a stupid thing to say, but let's just say that Shota continues to pitch this way and somehow wins the Cy Young, because he would win it if he has a 1 ERA after 30 starts. So he'd win Rookie of the Year over Yamamoto. He'd win the Cy Young. He'd win it all. I can't even give you a way to see that he'll finish with an ERA over 2 because it's so definite. Can we do that, Cook? What's your view of that? Is that an interesting way to see for people? Are there listeners or watchers on Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel? Hit the subscribe button. It's not that hard. Just hit subscribe. Are there people who think that it's a slam dunk that he will finish the season below 2? It almost seems impossible to believe. Now, we can root for that because that would be exciting, but it seems impossible to believe that you can extrapolate the next 4+ months to what has been a great first month. Yamamoto has had a great start to his career in LA. Remember, he signed that 12-year, $325 million deal, and I got on Nothing Personal. I looked right in the camera into the abyss of this huge studio audience, and I said, that is a deal. While all these teams claim they were offering him 300+, that level of exuberance seems irrational to me. You want to risk $53 million? You want to do a Dice K deal and do $100 million that you absolutely might as well just shove right down the sewer pipes? You know, fine. But $325 was a bit excessive to me. His career is starting off great. Last night, he pitched 8 strong against the Marlins. First time he'd gone more than 6 innings. Did you watch any part of that game? It was pretty funny. It brought me back to being with the Marlins. I didn't like being disrespected by a league-owned network. MLB Network was saying, hey, no-hitter alert, Yamamoto against the Marlins lineup. I don't get happy too often for Jazz, only because I know what's going on with him and the Marlins, but leading off the game with a home run made me happy. That was the end of that no-hitter. Of course, the Dodgers crushed him. So we'll see what happens with these Japanese sensations, but it's pretty exciting because as an executive, you want to believe that you know how to acquire players. You want to believe that you know how to evaluate players. You want to believe that you know how to project players in a way that normal people do not. The biggest example of when projection is really required is with the draft. The MLB, the Major League Baseball draft, is a complicated, difficult draft where failure, much like the game itself, failure in the draft is expected but not tolerated. It's a game of failure where when players fail too much, we say, go to the minor leagues or we'll trade you, we'll release you. So it's degrees of failing is really what baseball is. And the draft is very, very similar to that. But the failures in the draft become pronounced way more so now because of all of the armchair experts, some of whom have big platforms, some of whom can't work for teams they'd love to, but instead they write articles about all these players and what they're going to project to be and whether or not they should be drafted or shouldn't. And we all get graded on our drafts. Are we winners or losers? Did we get an A or a B? In football and basketball, I could argue it's way easier to evaluate that. In baseball, it's just way, way harder. I don't ever like getting complimented. We had a good draft one time. We had a good draft a lot of times. We had a lot of, I'm out of the game 7 years. I've got drafted players still all over baseball who are doing well. And I don't like being complimented for second, third, fourth, fifth round draft picks because it means I passed on him that many times. And if I knew he was going to be that good, why am I complimenting myself? What was the example? What's the name of the, he's with Tommy Lasorda, Mets, Dodgers. He then screwed up owning a team overseas. He's a Marlin guy. Mike Piazza. Thank you, Coca. Mike Piazza was drafted in the, I don't know what, the 69th round. And it's always such a compliment. Oh, look how smart the Dodgers were. Well, you passed on him 68 times. Are you that smart? The reason why I'm thinking about the draft is that Major League Baseball sent a memo to the teams. I always liked getting memos from baseball. They'd come from the commissioner sometimes. And it's to all memos. There's different distributions with these internal memos. Some are to all major league clubs. And then you have major league owners, major league presidents, major league GMs, major league farm directors, major league scouting directors, major league coaches. There's different categories. The important, like the gambling memos, lists everybody. Owners stand up and say, we want our own memo. So then you get a separate memo that's just to all owners. There was a memo that was sent, and there was a game that we'd play. Have I told you about the owners' meetings games that we would play? This was under Selig way more so than Manfred, but it still is true today. The game we would play is, how fast can something be said in an owners' meeting? How quickly does it get to Ron Blum of the Associated Press? So we're looking around when the commissioner would say something in an owners' meeting. Who's going to the bathroom right now? And what they do is, it in old owners' meetings, oh, total side note, Coca, the coffee and the danishes would be where the doors were, but then it was switched because what people would do inside the owners' meeting, and this was really, you know, cell phones were not a huge thing way back in the beginning, but you can't really be on your phone during an owners' meeting. You get in trouble for that. So an owner would get up, or a team executive would get up, go get a little Danish or a little donut or a little yogurt or some other MLB-sponsored product that you could eat, and then quietly slide out the door, and all of a sudden, boom, something gets leaked. So MLB said, we got a good idea. We're going to put the Danish not near the door. So when people are pretending to get up to get coffee, tea, Sanka, they actually have to get it because they can't escape. Oh, but can I use the restroom, please? MLB security will be out there. Who's out there on the phone? So all of these memos get leaked. A memo got leaked yesterday. There's something happening with players and with the draft, and it's all about teams that are trying to acquire players, get access to players in the most efficient way possible, which is through the draft. Except what teams have realized is it's even better to get players through the international draft, because there's no international draft. It's to get them through international signing. Because there is no international draft, which we fought for constantly. It was part of the last CBA, the CBA before that, the CBA before that. And owners have never been willing to stick to it. They give it up at the end in order to get a different type of concession. It happened with the last CBA. The international draft was to be negotiated even after the agreement was approved. And if it didn't have an approval within, let's say, a year or 6 months or 3 months, it was tied to qualifying offers with existing MLB free agents, you may recall. Well, a memo went out that teams apparently have been encouraging amateur players who are American. They're in the U.S. or they may have U.S. status, but they're not American. An example of that is Jose Fernandez was a Cuban but he came over to the U.S. and he played high school ball in Tampa. So he was draft eligible under what's called the Rule 4 draft, which is the United States draft, different than the international signs. Apparently, what teams are doing is they're getting in touch with players and say, we've got the best plan for you. We would like you to withdraw. Stop playing here. Don't play high school baseball. Go back overseas. Establish residency. Then you'll be eligible as an international sign and not a U.S. Rule 4 draft eligible player. This is awesome. I never did this. I, as Machiavellian as I can be, as calculated, as competitive, and willing to keep moving the damn line so I don't cross it. This is brilliant. Let's say you've got a sophomore in high school, and let's say that you've scouted him and that you're projecting that he's going to be an outstanding player, and you don't want him to be in the draft because then all the 30 teams have an opportunity to draft him at any time. So you say, here's an idea, John Doe. Go back to the Dominican and be Dominican again. Then we're going to reserve you. We're going to hide you, and we are going to do a deal with you right now. We will get you money under the table, to the side of the table. Oh, no, MLB is going to say that never happens. Horse hockey, it happens all the time. We're going to get you money. We're going to take care of your family right now. We're going to get that money back into the U.S. for your family that's probably in the U.S. because you're moving back to the Dominican without them, or they can move back with you. Then you'll be an international player. We'll bring you right over on a visa, and boom, we've got you. MLB found out this was happening, and they said, this sounds like a way that high-revenue teams are going to take advantage of low-revenue teams. This sounds like a way that people are trying to skirt the actual rules. And this sounds like owners are getting further and further away from supporting an international draft. We're going to put an end to it right this very second. And so the first step in doing that is to send a memo. I remember getting these memos, and I would put them in two categories. Let me give you my third category, which is a little used category, but still a category. I'd read a memo that came from baseball. Hey, I don't do that. Throw it away. Oh, I do that. Let me see how I need to change how I do that so I don't get in trouble. Third category. Oh, I don't do that. But what a great idea. I got to start doing that. I would say this memo would have been in the third category for me because I'd received the memo and I would not have been doing that. And I would say, wow, that may be something I'm going to start. So how is baseball going to deal with this? Memo is always the first step. Second step, you catch somebody and you make them the example. MLB makes a habit of doing this, and it's a smart way to do it. It's what teachers try to do with students. It's what you try to do in your company. When you know that something's bad about your company, you try to make an example out of somebody. Sometimes someone has to take the fall. So MLB is going to, after this memo, then they've got their department investigations. They've got a whole group of people working down in the Dominican. I think Albert Pujols is now a part of that. Now what they have to do as a follow-up is find a team that did it, and then find them, take away a draft pick, and then hope that that serves as a deterrent to other teams. I'm not sure it's going to work quite that way, but I know that's what MLB is trying to do currently. It was memo day in baseball yesterday. All right, let's take a break, Coco. When we come back, we're going to review a movie I just watched yesterday. We have an announcement to make, and then I want to talk about why commissioners find it necessary to do meetings with the Associated Press. And I will do that after the break.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. How are we doing? It's a Wednesday, hump day. I guess that means 2 days prior, 2 days coming. What if you don't work a Monday to Friday week? What if you only go into the office 3 days a week? I don't think it should be called hump day anymore. I'm just going to call it Wednesday. It's Survivor Day. Thank you for being a part of our show. I appreciate it. Keep spreading the word. Keep listening on platforms. Not all platforms, but pick like Apple, Spotify. If you want to listen or go on YouTube or the DraftKings Network, you know where to find the DraftKings Network. It's all over. Roku, Samsung. You can just go on YouTube. Everywhere. I think it's time for an announcement. Do we have... Coca, can you play some announcement music? Like one of your buttons that would indicate that, hey, we've got an announcement to make. What do you got? Come on, just for me, something, just press that, press button four, whatever it is. Even if it's dun, 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 like the music when you play when you don't like what I'm talking about. That's it. I'm not sure that's announcement music. That sounds more like I Dream of Jeannie, or when you're watching a sitcom and all of a sudden you're having a flashback to something that happened. Well, I guess that is appropriate, because here's the announcement. The Nothing Personal live tour is continuing. We've got two shows that were just added. City Winery contacted us and said, hey, you've got to come to Chicago and St. Louis. And I said, of course. Chicago and St. Louis are two of our most popular cities. I'm so thankful for our audience in Chicago and St. Louis that I want to get there. And even people in Milwaukee can make it down to Chicago. Here are the dates. Tickets go on sale on Friday on the City Winery website. There'll be a link on the DavidSampsonPodcast.com website. Here are the dates. I will be in St. Louis on June 25th. So get ready. Plenty of time for you to plan. It's during the summer. I'm sure it won't be hot at all. There'll be no schwitzing of any kind. You better bring a sweater because I'm going to have the air like at 50 in that City Winery. The day of the week of June 25th, Coca, it's completely escaping me, but luckily I have a phone right here. Tuesday night, June 25th, I'll be in St. Louis. And then the following Monday, July 1st, we're going to start July in Chicago. Maybe we can get Vince Vaughn. I'll do a duck tour with him. That is the announcement I wanted to make. Still possible cities to be added, but this second leg of the tour over that week, St. Louis on the 25th, Chicago on the 1st. And the only reason that this is happening is City Winery was so happy in every city. So happy with the performances, so happy with the tour. Thank you to Coca and Sarah for the video, for everything that you all do to support this live tour. It's fun. Two more cities. We're coming to you, St. Louis and Chicago. I watched a movie yesterday with Dennis Quaid called The Long Game. I'd never heard of it. It came out. I never knew the story. It's about a team of golfers, Mexican golfers, who were trying in the 1950s to become high school, to put together a high school golf team. I'm not going to get too serious now. We did a serious topic yesterday. I guess I'm serious about all my topics, but a total violation of my live and let live theory. All of these golf clubs and all of these white golfers who are so racist, Mexicans, you can't be here. You've got to be a caddy. You can't be a golfer. Get off our course. And it's not just Mexicans. It's African-Americans. It's Jewish people. It's everybody. What? What is it? What do you, you think that you're a non-Jew and you're white and you own the sport? Makes me crazy. It's an interesting story about what it is to do something in an era when no one wants you to do it. For kids to have the have the desire to be trailblazers. It's called The Long Game. It's a total double entendre. The movie is fine. The message is outstanding. The end, it feels good and right. You can imagine how it ends, whether or not these kids succeed at the high school level, whether they become pros or not is irrelevant. Spoiler alert, maybe one of them does. Whether or not you've heard their names before, spoiler alert, you haven't. But to learn about this story, it should just show you how wrong it is to be filled with hate for nothing because you're threatened by greatness or by drive or by ambition. That just means you're a small little nothing person, if that's what bothers you. I think that's all racism is. It's people who are insecure about anyone not looking like them and being better than they are, when the irony is everybody's better than you if you are a racist. Watch The Long Game. Nothing personal pick of the day. We had Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks beating the Reds. Remember we told you to take Zach Gallen because he's only minus 130? And when you are a Cy Young caliber pitcher, anytime you can get numbers like that, you just have to jump on it. So we did, and the Diamondbacks won, and Gallen was outstanding. So we are 58-67. Coco, we didn't discuss this before the show started, but I do want to ask you a question. I've gotten at davidsampsonpodcast.com. You can reach out to me. People reach out to me on Twitter at David P. Sampson or at X, excuse me. And the question was asked, when you say something on the show, why isn't that what you stick with? And they're referring to one thing only because I have total accountability, because I will always have accountability. And I told you that anytime Patrick Corbin pitches for the Washington Nationals, bet against the Nationals. There have been two starts in a row that somehow I missed. Maybe they were on a weekend. Maybe they were on a particular Wednesday night and I was focused on the NBA playoffs. Whatever the case may be, one was the Nationals against the Marlins and one was Corbin and the Nationals against another team. And the Nationals won both those games. And I did not take the loss in my nothing personal pick of the day for that. And people said I should have. Because I told you, even if it's not a pick of the day, even if it's on a weekend, whatever the case is, bet against the Nationals. So here's the solution I have for that. When it's not a pick of the day, it's not going to count for my record and for the unit that we're up or down, and we're down units right now as we are 9 games under .500. However, I do take responsibility because I told you to do a wager and to do a unit. So my bad, I am checking every day now the Nats rotation. So for example, Corbin next pitches on Friday. No matter what else is going on Friday, we're going against Corbin. But the two games that I missed, it's my mistake for missing, but they're not going to impact my record or my units because the only official wager for the nothing personal pick of the day are ones that we say on the air during a show. Because there have been times that I've had a pick of the day in the rundown and I forget to mention it. And Coca says, there's nothing you can do. You didn't mention it. So that is the way we are going to play this. Tonight, let's talk about those Astros. The Astros are underdogs against the Yankees. The Astros really came close to beating the Yankees yesterday. I think that they lost 69-1. They were right in that game from the beginning with Verlander. They're going against Carlos Rodon, and they are plus 124, and you'd think that that's not heavy enough, and I agree. They've got a pitcher going for them tonight who is going to be, isn't it, I was going to say Serengeti, which of course is not the right way to talk. As a matter of fact, it's ridiculous. That's not his name. But he's the rookie who was supposed to be good. It's Arrigetti, and he was their top pitching prospect. He's got like an 8-plus ERA. He has totally struggled. I believe he's going tonight against Rodon, but I'm having a moment, Coca. I don't know why. Hi, my name is David Sampson. All right, I'm good. We're taking the Astros. The Yankees have not lost to the Astros this year. They're 5-0. There's no reason when the trend is your friend to go against the trend. I just have this feeling that Dana Brown was so convincing and so loving and inspiring to his team, the Astros are going to win. We've got a second pick for today, and it is the Knicks 4.5 over the Pacers. Now, you may say that seems hard to believe, given that the Knicks had to get so lucky to beat them in game one. That's true. It is very tough when you lose a game the way the Pacers did in game one. My view is that this game will not be nearly as close. We're taking the Knicks 4.5 over the Pacers. Commissioners are often asked to meet the media. There are specific times they meet the media around their All-Star game. They meet the media when it is finals time, maybe entering the playoffs, when there are certain acute issues. Sometimes the commissioners have no choice but to get in front of the media. As part of a plan, when you are trying as a team or as a business or as a league to get messages out, there used to be something called an ET. And I don't mean extraterrestrial. There's no Spielberg talk here. It's an editorial tour. An editorial tour, like when I was trying to get a ballpark financed publicly in Miami, you go meet with the editorial staff of each paper. You sit down with writers. You sit down with publishers. And what you're trying to do is get them to support your effort. Not because there's a referendum coming, not because you care necessarily what the people think, you care what the politicians think, but what you're always trying to do is give politicians cover for doing what you want them to do. One of the great ways to get cover is to meet with editorial staffs, and then they come out with their opinion piece. It's like politicians getting support from a paper. The New York Times supports John Cotoston for governor in 2020. Things like that. That comes with meeting with editorial staffs. The Associated Press has found its way as an organization that obviously is neutral and important, no matter what you think of media today. And commissioners meet with them. And I wanted to go through a couple things that happened with these meetings that happened recently. And it is involving gambling. And it's a topic that we have covered and we will continue to cover. You know the relationship that Matt Lark and Nothing Personal has with DraftKings, with the DraftKings network. You know my view of the integrity of the game and the importance that these companies have to maintaining the integrity of the game, the technology that's used in order to make sure that people like Jontay Porter are caught quickly, disciplined quickly, and players realize, hey, listen, you better not do what you want to do or what you have been doing, because you're going to get caught. Notwithstanding that fact, the gambling issue is a huge part of the PR of these sports. It's why commissioners are talking about it all the time. Adam Silver, after suspending Jontay Porter for life, you remember the story of Porter? For those of you who don't, there are something called prop bets. You can bet money line, which is a team to win over another team. You can bet with the spread, which means a team is going to win by more than the spread number of points or lose by fewer than the amount of points that they're getting. There's all sorts of different ways to bet the result of a game. You can also bet the run scored in a game. You can over-unders on points scored. But there's this big amount of money that is bet on individual things happening. And it used to be like fun Super Bowl stuff. Who's going to win the coin toss? Will it be heads or tails? How long will the anthem be? Those were called prop bets. Prop bets is a word for not the normal type of money line or spread bets, but it's like a specialty bet. It's a strange bet. But then they've evolved. And they've gotten really intricate. Like you can bet a player to have 5 assists, 10 rebounds, and 22 points. And you can bet that that will be, he'll get over all of those categories and you can win a lot of money. And there's a lot of people who bet $5 to win like $1,000 on all of these different things happening. Props, parlays, hugely profitable for gambling companies, for casinos, for illegal bookmakers. But they're so enticing because you say to yourself, hey, I'm only risking $2 or $5 or $10. It's like a lottery ticket. No one ever thinks that anyone has a gambling problem when they're playing the lottery. You can win $1 billion or $100 million. You have a better chance of being hit by the lightning that you hear in the background of this show. Adam Silver has a prop bet problem. Rob Manfred has a prop bet problem. And the problem is that when you get players who have prop bets associated with them, that is an easy target for nefarious activity. And it manifested itself with Jontae Porter. So Adam Silver said, I've got an idea, gambling companies. Why don't we get rid of all prop bets? No, that's not a good idea. All right. Why don't we get rid of all prop bets for crappy players? Oh, we'll talk about that. What's your definition of a crappy player, Adam? Well, my definition is a player on a two-way contract. A two-way contract in the NBA is the same as someone on a split deal in Major League Baseball. That means they make a certain amount of money at the big league level when they're on the big league team, and they make a certain amount of money when they're in the minor leagues. It's called a split deal, a minor league salary and a major league salary. In the NBA, the split deal is a G League deal. Here's, you're on the G League, or when you come up and you get a 10-day deal or you're on the big league team or the NBA team for a period of time, you get the NBA minimum or a little above the minimum, whatever the case may be. That's called a split deal. Adam Silver said, how about we don't offer prop bets on any player like that, like a bottom of the rung player, because those players, in theory, in his mind, would be more subject to be influenced by outside sources to pretend they're injured and leave games and guarantee the under. The gambling company said, well, there's not a lot of action on those types of bets. We would maybe think about that. Spoiler alert, I don't think so. How about this? How about we don't do any unders? If players are going to get in trouble and if players are going to get influenced, we might as well have players be influenced to be great. How about if we eliminate all the unders and only do overs? It's totally preposterous. The company said, well, that makes no sense because people unders hit all the time. And so we have to set a real market, but of course an under is going to hit. So maybe what we should do is not allow unders, but then the gambling companies would say to themselves, but people want the unders. They're just going to go back to their illegal bookmakers to do the unders. We're trying to take market share from the illegal bookmakers. And the league, you should not want us to lose any market share. You don't want anybody betting with illegal bookmakers. A, it's illegal. B, they tend to break legs and they work on credit. We don't. And C, we can't track it. So Adam Silver said, yeah, maybe you're right. What, you sure you won't consider eliminating prop bets? Here's what, how I think this ends, because the negotiations are ongoing and it's a thing. When there is a thing involving gambling, as this market matures, as it evolves, as the leagues and the gambling companies figure out how they're going to work together and be dancing partners, there's going to have to be some give by the gambling companies. Some way for the leagues to say, listen, fans out there, don't you worry about our sport. We're on it. We're all about integrity. We're going to have the outliers. We're going to have the bad actors. But it's like thinking one bad person makes an entire bad community. So I believe there will have to be an agreement made between the gambling companies and the leagues that will have some sort of announcement that comes with it that will allow for a change that, in fact, won't be significant. It won't really change the likelihood that players will continue to be subject to doing bad things or being around bad people. But the leagues will be able to claim victory, and the gambling companies will be able to say, we are aiding in that process without sacrificing all too many dollars. It's sort of like when Rob Manfred said, we'd be better off with no prop bet as to will the first pitch be a ball or a strike. Because how easy would it be to get to the pitcher and say, you're not going to ruin the game. Just throw ball one. It's not that hard. You can do it. And what MLB and Manfred and what the NBA and Adam Silver are doing is they're setting up the gambling community and the gambling companies to be very clear that a victory is required because of the bad press that's come with the Shohei Ohtani issue, with the Jante Porter issue. And there's got to be a change. And that change is going to come sooner than you think. When they're sitting around and negotiating and talking all about what it would mean, they look at each other and say, we'll do it. It's just business. This is nothing personal.